This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hello, everybody. Happy Tuesday. Welcome into the program. I'm Charlie Arnold. Well, as we all know, the long-awaited, and I honestly never thought I would say long-awaited before the words NBA draft, but, you know, things have really changed. This past year, the WNBA, women's basketball has blown up in a way that we probably couldn't have predicted, and therefore people more excited about the WNBA draft than typically we have seen in the past. So here we go. The long-awaited WNBA draft, it went down last night in Brooklyn. Coverage of the event was everywhere. Like, I am talking on my TV. I was seeing it all over the sports networks, all over my social media. Were posts from it that were occurring in real time. We're getting legitimately hundreds of thousands of likes. It was very different to see. It was very cool to see. Completely unprecedented, and that's the point. The women, particularly Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese, they stole the show during March Madness. Now fans are pumped to see them move on to the next chapters in their respective careers. Now, last night was definitely a time to celebrate some of the most talented women of today, which is why it was shocking that the appreciation for these real women wasn't a common theme among the many WNBA fans who were huddling outside the draft venue. My producer, Katie McDuffie, was out there, and she asked a simple question to several of these fans. Do trans athletes belong in women's sports? And I was blown away by the responses she got. Listen to this.
So you mentioned you're here to support women in sports, and there's a big debate going around in sports if biological men should be able to compete on a women's team. Do you think that they should be allowed on the WNBA rosters?
If someone feels they are a woman and has and is a woman, then they should be playing in women's sports.
So even if it's like LeBron James?
Yes.
LeBron James could compete on a women's team.
If LeBron James is going to transition and become a woman, then I think that he should play in women's sports.
I mean, of course, you can get into the weeds of, like, testosterone levels, whatever, but I think if she's a woman, she's a woman, and, like, yeah. Let her compete. We can't take away sports away from trans people, so yeah. I think it's important.
Do you think that it's fair, though, that a biological male who's naturally stronger, faster, and bigger is taking away opportunities from women?
I don't like the way that question is phrased, so I don't think that is, first of all, how that should be phrased, right? Again, education and information and knowledge about hormone levels should be first and foremost learned about before that discussion takes place.
So do you think that a WNBA team can beat an NBA team?
Yeah, most definitely.
Wait, really?
Yeah, Pistons.
Come on, Raptors. You don't think that.
A WNBA team will beat a Pistons, Raptors, Wizards, Spurs, and let's say one more team, I'll go the Nets.
What? I'm like, what are these people talking about? Okay, I understand that this guy at the end is naming the bottom of the barrel NBA teams, but the only reason they have these losing records and are, quote, not so great at this current point in time is because they're playing super incredible NBA teams who just have stacked rosters. Otherwise, they're still very talented teams. They're just not quite as talented as some of the other teams in the NBA. So you can't say, oh, the Pistons, because, I don't know, they might be last in the Eastern Conference, wouldn't beat the WNBA team. Okay, there's one. The opening girl who talked about, yes, LeBron James, if he wants to identify as a woman, should certainly be allowed on a team. I have a feeling this girl who's out there, even though she likes the WNBA, good for her for supporting sports, I have a feeling she's never been an athlete in her life, because she would realize immediately that having LeBron James, even if he did decide to identify as a woman, on a women's team would not be a smart idea. And then there's the other girl who talked about, you know, we're just getting in the weeds talking about testosterone levels. We're not in the weeds at all. That's the whole point of it, is testosterone gives you the ability to have these athletic talents that women just don't have, because our testosterone levels are not near what men's are. That's the whole point, is when women start taking steroids, that's when they start getting really jacked and really strong. That's because their testosterone levels have been raised. Anyways, I am so taken back by these responses. And I think we've got to just take a breath, me for one, and just bring some of these people back to reality. These people do not realize that their idols, the reason why they're outside the draft venue supporting these women who are getting drafted, would not have had nearly the same type of opportunities or success if they were forced to play alongside biological males. So think about it. If there was some strong, ultra-fast trans athlete who played guard, let's just call a LeBron James, would they use them or Caitlin Clark? I mean, I have a good feeling which one they would probably use. Or if the trans athlete was on the opposing team and guarding Clark, would she have put up near as many points and set records like she did? Again, I'm going to say no chance. Not to mention the possibility of these star draftees having gotten injured by athletes who are bigger, stronger, and faster than them. The draft would have looked a whole lot different last night if biological men were allowed to compete in the WNBA. So, some food for thought for those people outside the draft hall last night and for anybody else who is still, for whatever reason, confused on this topic. Now, speaking of the question of do biological men belong in women's sports, there's this from OutKick founder Clay Travis earlier this week. He tweeted out on X, after OutKick asked Dawn Staley whether men should be able to play women's basketball, the WNBA has refused to credential OutKick for the draft this week. Circling the wagons to make sure men can compete in women's athletics without criticism is legit incredible, but it's where we are. So here's a few facts. One must be noted, OutKick did miss the deadline to apply for the WNBA draft credentials, which could have been enough reason for the WNBA to deny admission for any reason. However, a member of the OutKick team spoke to a member of the CBS team last night who also was outside the draft venue, and they said that they were also late in applying and were still granted limited access, not full access. They weren't allowed inside, but they were allowed outside to talk to the people walking in. So the question is, why was the late penalty not evenly applied? Probably a no-brainer for the WNBA just to deny OutKick on the grounds of being late and not worry about the potential for more questions that didn't want to be answered on their big night. But here to help me break down the WNBA draft a little bit more, talk about it and what it means in the futures of Caitlin Clark and other women like Angel Reese, we have none other than Emily Austin, the host of the Hoop Chat.
Hi.
Hello, Emily. How are you this morning?
Thank you.
Okay, so let's get into it. Last night, unprecedented. We have never seen coverage like this before for the WNBA draft. I mean, it was all over the place on TV, on social media. What was your reaction to seeing so many people getting involved with the draft coverage and so many people excited about it?
What I'd actually like to see are people excited about it. Everyone is, I'm so going to get canceled for this. Everyone keeps pretending that they care. Come the actual WNBA season, suddenly the arenas are empty. I don't see anybody selling out season tickets. In fact, it looks pretty much empty, televised and in person. So rather than people pretending that they care because Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese happen to be very talented, actually care. You know, I saw an NFL player last night. He tweeted, it's really sad that the first pick is getting this salary. And the salary was very sad. So are you going to buy season tickets now? Are you going to give a piece of your salary to them? How do you expect them to now generate revenue? You're saying it's sad, but I don't see you going out there and supporting WNBA besides that one tweet you decided to put out there.
Yeah, and that is a good point. I actually saw Caitlin Clark's salary as well, and I was like, whoa, wait a second. Because at first I saw it was a four-year contract. I think she's making around like $350,000. And at first I was like, oh, she's making $350,000 a year, which still for a professional athlete is a minimum contract in most senses of it. But then I was like, oh, no, wait, this is $350,000 for all 4 years, which breaks down to like $70,000+ a year, which is about the amount of money that I made for one of my first jobs out of school. So, yeah, pretty pathetic. I have probably a good idea that these pro athletes that you speak of aren't going to be chipping in by any means. But something that was cool to see is I saw, for example, Fanatics. They had Caitlin Clark jerseys. And within an hour of them being put up for sale, every single size was sold out. So people are still starting to support. And I know that season tickets for the Indianapolis Fever have been going very quickly. So, you know, not right now. She's unfortunately already stuck in this 4-year deal that she's committed to, so she won't probably see so much of that money. But who knows what can happen in later years, or if there even will be an uptick, because, you know, let's talk about the fact that people have been supporting women's college basketball now more than ever. March Madness, more watched, and even the men's, the championship game watched, even had even higher ratings than the men's game. But do you think that's going to actually translate to the WNBA? I mean, I think the first couple games, people are going to be super excited. Oh my gosh, Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, Cameron Brink, whoever their favorite is. But is this going to last long term?
It could. I don't think it will. The college basketball scene is very different because the college community, I mean, I just said it, it's a community. When you graduate that college, you still want to see them succeed. You brag about where you went. You're usually part of a frat or a sorority. I wouldn't know anything about that. But you have that sense of community that the WNBA lacks. Now, they could build it. But I also want to bring up a point that's always neglected. Do you think it's any different in the G League? The G League athletes, unless you're on a two-way, they barely get paid too. Their arenas are empty too. I mean, my first job out of college is with the Long Island Nets, the Brooklyn G League team. When I tell you it was the saddest arena I've ever set foot in, I'm not exaggerating. So now you have basketball that still lacks, I guess, well, the G League, that sense of community. And you're trying to build the WNBA, which arguably has even less than the men's G League. And you just expect it to boom because you have two good players. Like I said, they are very talented. Caitlin Clark has brought so much attention and it's a good first step. But unless they can build that sense of community, which they can't really control that, that's going to be up to all of the alleged fans who are tweeting that they support it. If you really want to see them succeed, it's really up to you as the fan to go out there and financially support them and tweet about them and post them on your stories. And that's how they will succeed. Because unless you have that diehard fan base that college campuses have and all these schools have, you're never going to have that in WNBA if it's not for the fans.
Okay, so Emily, I want you to first talk about, because I've heard like maybe you're not such a big fan of Angel Reese. Is that correct?
I try to beat her on the bush. She has a nasty attitude. I don't like it. I'm not a fan.
Yeah. Okay. So that, you know, I think a lot of people feel that way because she has shown that certainly in the past, just not a great attitude, a little bit of a holier than thou vibe, I would say. Last night, though, at the draft, when she was interviewed after she, you know, took the stage and she was interviewed by ESPN, she did seem to be a little bit more humbled. Now, I don't know if that's just an immediate after effect of getting drafted, and maybe in that moment she was just feeling super grateful, but I'm unsure. Do you think there's a possibility maybe we see a different side of Angel Reese when she enters the WNBA, and now she's playing with veterans who have been around for much longer, who are going to put her in her place, quite frankly, and she's not going to be running the show like she was at LSU?
You'll get likely a more humble version of her. I don't want to say not because she's more humble now, but maybe because she will be humbled now. You're out of the college spotlight. You go from LSU to the WNBA. You're not going to have as many fans that are following you from college to the WNBA. Now, that's not me being a hater. That's me being a realist. And I'll tell you what really upset me about her. It's not so much the hand in the face, because I actually love smack talk. I wish the NBA did it more. I thought that was really fun. I wasn't upset about that at all. I think the way she handled it, again, wasn't classy. But then again, smack talk's not supposed to be. What really, really put the nail in the coffin for me was the Instagram, bringing your BS on the court publicly to Instagram and addressing everything and making it a bigger stink than it was. And then what disgusted me was not just Angel, but the entire team of LSU boycotting the national anthem. Are you joking right now? You don't like America? Do you want to go play in Russia like Britney did? Like, I don't understand. You have it so good here and you still complain about this country. Now you're in the limelight. Now you're setting an example for the children, for the future of athletes. And you're showing them that you're anti-America, yet you live here and you enjoy the perks here and you play basketball here, but you don't feel like you're obligated to listen to the national anthem of the country you live in, which is a beautiful country.
Mm-hmm. Was there anything else last night at the draft, Emily, that you saw that either surprised you or you were happy to see or you expected to see that didn't surprise you? Anything that just stood out to you?
Not at all. I mean, I'm going to totally out myself here. I watched Caitlin get drafted and then I followed the rest. If you tell me that most people did not do that, I think that the stats are made up. I'd actually like to see that. I want to see the stats of people who watched the... Okay, I'm getting ahead of myself. I didn't even watch the entire NBA. I'm not sitting through the entire
WNBA. Well, yeah, right.
Twitter highlights. X highlights.
And that's a good point. I think that probably you were among the majority. People just wanted to tune in, see the first couple of draft picks, maybe up till number seven when Angel Reese went, because a lot of people were interested in seeing what ended up transpiring with her. But yes, I would be very surprised if people watched the entire duration of the WNBA draft last night. Though I must say, something surprising to me that I'm not quite so used to seeing were the outfits. Emily, I was really impressed with the fashion choices of Caitlin Clark. I loved Cameron Brink's dress. I know that Caitlin Clark was wearing Prada. And I was like, okay, Caitlin. And then Cameron Brink was wearing Balmain, which was also just stunning. And it was funny because I posted it on my story and one of my friends, he sent me a picture from, you know, one of the draft classes from way back when, and he was like, why does this look like it's a student council photo? Which it did. They were all wearing like blouses and weird pantsuits. So that was a nice shift too. Also, you see these women looking more like women.
Honestly, yeah, that was really cool to see because it's your time to shine. That's something that I also look into when it comes to the NBA draft is, okay, who are you wearing? What are you wearing? Do you look like a clown? It's fun to like break it down. I also noticed, by the way, Caitlin Clark's Prada, and I was like, okay, Slay Queen. And being a judge for Miss Universe before they fired me after October 7th, of course, was in my head, I was just like judging everyone's outfits. And I'm like, wait, it's not my job anymore. But it was really cool. Even Angel, she wore like that, like, I don't even know if it was sequin, but it was sparkly outfit. Everyone looked fire last night. It was really nice to see. And honestly, part of the entertainment was seeing how nice they looked.
Yeah, no, it was very refreshing. And I agree. Angel Reese did look really nice. She had like that hooded dress on, which was like very fashion forward. So I appreciated that. Emily, something I want to note before we move on from basketball is just on the topic of LSU not being out there for the national anthem. A lot of people assumed it was a boycott. We did learn that they had like some strategizing that they were doing before the game. So instead of being out, I mean, they should have been out there. That is without a doubt something that they should have figured out. But they were like having their own pregame type thing going on and they supposedly lost track of time and didn't know when the anthem was going on. I mean, listen, that's what they said. It wasn't a boycott. But of course, I think a lot of people agree that this is a huge game. You have the national spotlight on you. You should have been out there. And probably even if you were doing your pregame routine, which they have been doing, you know, they missed a lot of the national anthems. That was the reason that they actually weren't out there.
Well, thank you for clarifying that. And I'm glad I didn't tweet that because community notes would have violated me. But I don't, not that anyone's asking, but I don't believe that that's the truth. Okay, maybe they were boycotting it, but how could you be so irresponsible to miss the national anthem on such a hyped up game? Because that doesn't make it any better, in my opinion. Like, you still missed it. That's humiliating. That's disrespectful. If anyone else did it, it would be horrible. And it's just like, you can't be that irresponsible for something so important. Not like you walked out a minute late. You missed the entirety of the national anthem. If there's one team standing and the other side of the court is empty, it's just embarrassing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you know, on the subject now, switching gears a bit, but also irresponsible, disrespectful, the anti-Israel protesters that we have been seeing in every major city, it feels like, over the course of the past few days, I mean, just causing complete chaos, disrupting people's lives, not letting people get about for their daily activities. I mean, it's just blocking major bridges. What's up with these people? Like, do they just not have any lives, or do they not have any sense of what's actually going on in the world, that this is the type of stand that they're taking still at this point in time, when we just saw what happened with the Islamic Republic in Israel in the past couple of days?
When I see these videos, the first thing that comes to mind, no joke, do these people have jobs? Every single day you will find these morons blocking traffic, blocking the airport, blocking bridges now. And then my second question is, why were they not immediately arrested? And maybe people should get more angry and just pull them out of the street. Because I know if I was on my way to work in a rush hour in the morning or trying to get to a flight and there was somebody blocking traffic, I would not be so nice. And then my second thought is, it's very important to distinguish the difference between a protest, which has helped shape history in the past in good ways for the most part, besides recent years, versus blatant harassment and anti-Semitism. This is harassment. And these quickly, very quickly transpire into Jew hatred and violence. Mm-hmm. It's so funny, if you just compared the pro-Israel protests versus the pro-Hamas protests, you see singing, dancing, unity, it's all beautiful and light. And then you see the pro-Hamas protests, where they start with bomb Israel, and then it extends into death to America, which then extends into a Hezbollah flag being waved in Manhattan yesterday. And it's like, are you just a terrorist? Because if so, you should be deported and arrested for treason. And I know, mm-hmm. I don't know why it's being tolerated, because people will go as far as you let them. If you arrest all these people and you throw them in jail, not for 24 hours, for blocking the Golden Gate Bridge, I promise you they will stop doing it.
Oh, yeah. And there were even protests at DCA, I saw, where people who, obviously, they're traveling to the airport to try to make their flights, they had to get out far before the terminal because they couldn't get through. I mean, this is on... federal property, right? And the fact that these people weren't locked up and thrown in jail is astonishing, especially when you contrast it to the idea of, what if there was a pro-Donald Trump rally, right? What would happen to those people? They would be labeled as extreme MAGA. They would certainly be locked up instantly, and they would probably not be let out on any type of bail and be tried for all different types of things, as we've seen in the past. So it's just pretty disgusting how the left treats their own differently than, you know, other people who share a difference of opinion. Also, Emily, I want to just kind of inform people, because I saw the video that's going viral on social media right now. I can't recall the girl's name, but she's an Iranian woman. And she put out a really thoughtful video about how the Islamic Republic is not Iran. So stop saying you support Iran's ability to defend itself, because that's not what it's about. They're not asking for you to come to their saving grace. They, you know, before they were asking people to stand up for them, but not in this instance. They do not want war. Can you just talk about a little bit of the difference? You know, what is the Islamic Republic versus Iran, and why should people be more cognizant of the difference between the two?
So the people of Iran, for the most part, it's completely different than Palestine, and I hate the comparison, because the people of Iran actually hate the oppression they face from their government, which has been hijacked by Khomeini, Hezbollah, and this terrorist regime. Versus in the 70s and 80s, maybe, I don't know about the 80s, but in the 70s, you can find women on the beach with their freedom and all of their human rights, and it was hijacked. And I'm trying to remember the last president's name. He's such a great guy, him and his wife, before they were expelled from the country and now are hiding in the United States. Oh, the Pahlavi family. But if they were still in power, they would not be facing the terrorism and this horrible hijacked regime that they have now. But the people don't support it. The difference between Palestine and Iran right now is that most of the Palestinians support Hamas. And unfortunately, the Iranians are still trying to get rid of this terrorist regime. I mean, you saw the uprising when Mahsa Amini was murdered. You saw how they tried to reject the authoritarianism from the government, and they just failed to do so because you have the military against these harmless people who just want their freedom. Now, when people, and I'm guilty of doing this, say Iran is Hezbollah or Iran is a terrorist country, it's very insulting to the civilians who also want to break from the terrorism that their country has in a chokehold. And it's sad because we all do it. I mean, we're quick to say Iran, 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 not the Islamic Republic, because that's not what everyone believes. And the Iranians then face the same discrimination that like only the terrorists should be receiving. But we're all guilty of doing that. And we should stop. They even say to stop using the current flag of Iran because it doesn't represent what the people believe and what the prior administration had when they had their freedom and democracy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Thank you so much for clarifying that, because I had some knowledge of it, but I think watching this video that the girl just recently put out, like I said, it's going absolutely viral, and I'm happy for that because it shows that people are working on educating themselves, which, you know, we love to see. But yeah, there's some stark differences that I think just for people that are touch and go on the subject, they don't realize. So that was very eye-opening to hear and listen to. But on the subject of the Pahlavis, their eldest daughter is one of my best friends. So amazing family, support everything that they do. And I appreciate you saying that about them. Finally, Emily, you, I think, recently went to Israel. Is that not correct?
Yeah, I went the first week of December. I think it was Hanukkah, the end of Hanukkah.
Okay. And what was it like over there at that point?
I don't want to say it was horrible, because it's not. Every time I go to Israel, it's always a good time and it's fun, but it was a very draining and heavy trip because the country as an entire whole body is mutually suffering. You know, when one person dies in Israel, it's almost like you're one person away from knowing him or her. Like, everyone was mourning October 7th, and the problem is that no one was given time or a chance to mourn, because right after October 7th, before Israel even retaliated, the entire world seems to just be pro, it's okay to be pro-Palestine, but not in replacement of Israel, which is what they called the sea, the eradication of Israel. And then because October 7th wasn't enough, the ceasefire now crowd isn't aware that Hamas and Hezbollah still send missiles into Israel every single day. Which, if you haven't been to Israel, that means you hear sirens, you have 60 seconds to run into the shelter, you need to hide, and it's never one or two missiles. They come nonstop. And this last week, they had another range from Iran, from the Islamic Republic, coming into Israel that's just terrorizing their civilians left and right. And again, unless you've been there, you don't know how disruptive it is. You cannot go about your day when there are literal rockets overhead. And now everyone's argument is the Iron Dome. What do you think happens when the missiles intercept? They don't swallow it. The pieces fall and people still get hurt. In fact, Iran, the Islamic Republic, hurt a 7-year-old Arab girl who's now fighting for her life in the hospital. Not even a Jew, which I'm sure was their intention.
So how are people living over there? I mean, what's the feeling that Israeli citizens wake up with each and every day now, not knowing what their day is going to look like, what kind of danger they could face?
I know a lot of Israelis who are leaving Israel. I landed here in Miami yesterday, and there were like 3 flights from Israel coming in. And then I know Americans flying to Israel to show their solidarity. But they live their life pretty normally, which is probably not the answer you expected, because they are so unfortunately used to the missiles and the rockets. Now, them coming from Hezbollah, I wouldn't call it new, but it's less frequent than them coming from like Hamas and the usual rockets that they face, but to them, it's part of their daily routine. Now, what they don't see is an October 7th happen frequently. So I would say they live their day pretty still melancholy. We still have hostages, 136, apparently only 30 alive in Gaza. That's someone's family member. That's someone's friend. That's someone's neighbor in Israel. And then to add to that, you know, you have the scrutiny from the world for a country that's done nothing but defend themselves. You have the social media bullying left and right. You see these protests calling for people to bomb Israel, which is the same people calling for a ceasefire. And that, I don't know how they feel about. I don't envy that feeling of knowing people hate you for pretty much nothing, for the misinformation that's being spread online. And I'm sure it's not a great feeling to be an Israeli right now. And then to put the icing on the cake, they still have their own political protests, which, if you ask me, not the time. Not the time to be boycotting your prime minister or calling for a change in the middle of a war. But in addition to all of the suffering they faced, they still have their own internal politics going on. And it's just a messy situation.
Yeah, Messi is probably putting it very lightly. Emily, any trips? I know right now probably you have a lot going on, but any trips planned to go back to Israel anytime soon or in the next few months?
I want to go back in May. If Hezbollah is going to be sending rockets, I'm not going back. I already faced the first week of December from a Hamas wannabe that hijacked a car and tried to shoot people. I don't feel like being in that situation. So if the war settles by May, I'd like to go. If not, I'm not putting myself in harm's way.
Well, no matter what, we'll certainly be following what you're doing because you're up to so many cool and interesting things. From talking basketball to being an advocate for Israel, you seem like a woman who can do it all. So I appreciate your time and also your insight this morning. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. See you soon.
Outkick the Morning will be right back after a short break. Stay tuned.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Okay. Wow. She's so interesting, right? I mean, she literally can talk about everything. Like I said, a woman who can do it all. Okay, finally, before I let you go, this video made me laugh last night. It's always nice to laugh before you go to bed. Danny Dimes, he started getting back in front of the media. He's rehabbing, says he will be ready by training camp. So all you Giants fans, you can rest easy. But there was something a little strange going on when he was at a recent press conference. Take a look at this video.
If you're healthy, this summer in training camp, which you hope to be, and going on into the season, you feel you're the best quarterback that the Giants can have to start their season with?
I do, yes.
Okay, that is quite literally the definition of crazy eyes. I wonder if he went back and watched that. He was like, oh my gosh, why do I look like that? Now, you know, I can only help but speculate why. Sorry, I'm going to fix my mic cord real quick so it's not sticking out. I can only speculate why his eyes look so buggy. One, I mean, the guy is probably hopped up on so many medications he's lost count. He's rehabbing an ACL injury. He's definitely trying to get that fixed sooner rather than later. And I don't know the pain level, but there's a good chance he probably needs, you know, a little bit more when he's in front of the media, because that can be, as we know, very painful for athletes. Also, I was thinking, you know, maybe he was starving. Maybe right after this press conference, he was thinking about his next meal. And I know I get a little crazy when I'm thinking about my next meal. So maybe that was the reason for him having the buggy eyes. Finally, my last thought was, and this is probably the most likely of them all, Tommy DeVito. You know, the one starter of the Giants when Danny Dimes was out. Italian guy. Possible mob ties. I don't know, but I would guess so. Maybe Tommy DeVito's people made a threat to Daniel Jones and said, listen, buddy, that ACL of yours is not going to be ready in time for training camp. You're not going to be ready in time for the season. And if you are, you and your family better watch out. You know, maybe that was what was making him feel so scared and making his eyes look like they were about to pop out of his head. Listen, sounds likely, doesn't it? Okay, everybody, that's it. On that note, it is time to say goodbye, so long. See you in about 24 hours. Until then, follow me on social media at Charlie on TV. Have yourselves a great Tuesday, and I will see you tomorrow for Wednesday's show.